Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, it was a fun one last night. A lot of three-point shots. They didn't quite make 20 like they made a couple games in a row there. But Donovan Mitchell was brilliant, per usual. 5 of 11 from 3, 9 of 19 from the floor. A couple guys scored in double figures. Another Cavs win, 7 in a row, 2-0 on the road trip. We'll talk more about it throughout the show. I got to be honest, Jake. We nearly had a situation in our hands this morning because Jake and I basically consensusly agreed. I think both of us are similar in this way. Like we're kind of night owls. We're up late oftentimes, like working on stuff, whatever. And so we're okay to like stay up late and get stuff done. But then the repercussions of that are like we don't always wake up in the morning like when we intend to. This happens to me sometimes. And I've gotten better as I've gotten older, like even if I'm running on a little bit of sleep. And we told each other on Sunday, because we saw each other Sunday pregame, that if either of us didn't text the other by 5 a.m., that we were going to call the other person to make sure that they were awake. And it's funny because like yesterday, neither of us had an issue. And then this morning, I was up. My alarm was for 4:30. I woke up. And I was laying in bed, and I had a second alarm set for 4:35, and I was sitting there like reading an article quickly. I was like, oh, I want to see what this has to say. And my second alarm goes off. I turn it off, and I was like, all right, I got to get up. And then I went back to trying to finish this article, dozed off. Next thing I know, I'm waking up to you calling me at 5 o'clock.
It happens. You know, that's where we are. I'm surprised that I'm the one that was awake. That's what I got 2 days in a row.
God, can you imagine neither of us were?
Congratulations on all your success.
Kayla, you'd be hosting the show right now. It'd be Cole-John show.
We did find out yesterday that I'm a little bit more of a sports expert than the both of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. You were trying to tell us about a former Browns quarterback. We couldn't remember who it was. And it was
backup.
Josh Dobbs.
Backup quarterback, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. That was, yeah. So I'm glad that happened. But yeah, that was my morning because I stayed up late trying to consume. I wasn't like watching completely intently because I had some other stuff going on. I had to record a podcast and to do some other stuff. But I was trying to watch the Cavs game. And this is what those West Coast trips do to you. They just turn your brain into mush because you're running on like 3 hours of sleep two nights in a row.
Oh, this is great. I was, I'm watching the game laying in bed on my laptop. And watching it in a unique method, if you would. But, you know, maybe not the traditional.
Oh, unique, yeah. like,
you know, not your traditional cable viewing, if you get
gotcha.
Picking up what I'm putting
down. You don't have NBA League Pass, is
no,
what you're trying
no,
to tell
No, I don't
me.
Have that.
It was somebody else's NBA League Pass, perhaps?
Not that either. But
the reason I say that is because some of those unique ways that you can watch these games, it literally is somebody else's league pass that
pops
up. Like you're just like basically mooching off of somebody else's league pass.
Yeah,
what I've realized, I think.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I was watching the Warriors timeout entertainment.
I was gonna say, yeah, you get the in-house feed and you just like see the games they play and all that during the breaks. Yeah, that's always a joy.
I headed off to the side at halftime and was watching like 12-year-olds play basketball.
See if you can make as many threes as Steph Curry.
Yeah, but I was watching, I got to about 5 minutes in the fourth quarter, and I fell asleep, and I woke up, laptop on my chest, to just Kenny Atkinson's face staring back at me in the press conference. It was like 3
was
a.m.
That like something,
I woke up, and I was terrified.
Well, I was going to say, was that something that was like alarming, or was that something that was like comforting, like, oh, Kenny Atkinson? Or was like, Jesus, Kenny Atkinson, man.
Yeah, no, it was alarming. It was a very like blown up, very close, just absolute close-up of Kenny Atkinson's face, so I was terrified.
Yeah, so I mean, listen, it's just the worst. Like, it was the worst timing in terms of like doing the morning show and having that this be the time that they're on the West Coast trip for both of us. I guess. I mean, I guess the good news is because there have been nights where I'm up late doing something and I'm like, I know I'm going to go up and go to bed, but I fall asleep like watching it on TV like downstairs. And I forget to set like an alarm and I got to be up in the morning. I don't know if I've ever done that with the morning show, but just for like other things. And then luckily, usually my body like wakes me up naturally at like a certain time. Like I just wake up And I'll be like, oh, I'm not supposed to be here. And so luckily, that usually happens. But at least it wasn't one of those situations for me where it was like I was watching the game, fell asleep, didn't set an alarm, and then next thing I know, you're calling me at 5 a.m.
Yeah, no, that was my instant oh, no moment. It was Kenny Atkinson, heart attack, and then oh, no, what time is it? Because I had no alarm set.
Because
I'll put the alarm on after the Cavs are over. And I was like, oh.
So you
and
almost had that exact scenario I described. Yeah, that's the worst is when you like you don't know what time it is. And I think everyone's been there where like they woke up and they knew that they were supposed to be up at a certain time, but they don't know exactly if it was that time and if they were actually waking up at that time. And so, yeah, you're like scrambling to like find your phone and then you're like, oh, it's only 3 a.m. I'm okay. I still got a whole another hour of sleep to go.
Yeah. It's not like waking up at 3 a.m. going, I got 45 minutes. Oh, wow. This is great.
Yeah. I don't know. I pushed mine to the limit. I would have been, for me, that would have been another 90 minutes. I would have been like, all right, I got till 4:30. I'm good. I can get some more sleep in. What do they say? Like the best naps are like 45 minute naps anyway. So that's, you know, it's perfect.
Yeah, I'm a multiple alarm person. So alarm one goes off at 4 a.m. It's 4 a.m. So I get up and then I'm like, all right, I can go back to bed, but I'm only half asleep for the next like 10 minutes wherever alarm is going off.
I'm a multi-alarm person. It drives my wife nuts because that's always been me. And she like, if there's mornings where like she's home and I'm the one getting up, she gets annoyed that she has to like hear like three alarms go off. That's, which is actually like, so the last two nights I slept in our guest room because A, she's sick, and I was like, I'm not going to have you like waking up at 4:30 in the morning when you're not feeling good. Like, that's not great for you. And then you got to like take care of our son for like at least 3 hours before I get home. So I was like, I'm going to just like give you the reprieve on this one. And then on top of that, like, I know it just annoys her. If it was like a normal week, I probably wouldn't have cared. But because it's like she's on break still from work and all that, I'm like, you're trying to sleep in as long as you can. So I was trying to do a nice thing and it almost cost me because I almost didn't wake up in time. Because that's my backup. My backup is like, if I don't hear my alarm, my wife just can like kick me, hit me, punch me in the face as hard as she wants. And like, I know that I'll wake up. But like when I don't have that, I know I'm dependent on my alarm or apparently Jake Volnick to give me a call and wake me up.
I'm horrible. Horrible. Looking to make money anyway I can.
Are you going to charge me for this?
No, first time's free. First time's free. It's like a free trial. It's a free trial. If you want another one, though, I mean, we're charging by the call.
If I had overslept yesterday, I would have charged today because it would have been the first time you called me. Man, thank God we're not hosting the morning show tomorrow.
You would have gotten a call. You'd have been like, I'm up. And then I would have been like, you'd have had a text. And it would have just been the QR code of my Venmo. That's what it would have been.
Welcome to a text. No, it would have been you calling me. But as soon as I pick up, you just hang up. Yeah. You don't say anything. And then I just see you send me your Venmo like, all right, that'll be $25.
Glad you're awake, ready to do the show. But you're going to be a little bit more broke this morning.
But we are here. It's Spencer German. It's Jake Volnick. Cavs did get another win last night. I guess we're going to talk more in depth about this team, obviously, throughout the show. And we got some Bronze stuff to get into as well, obviously. We got some Ohio State stuff to get into. Brendan Gulick, our good friend and colleague here at the station, who is going to be heading out to Pasadena. I thought he was already there. He's not there. We're going to pick his brain about Ohio State, Oregon, which obviously is a massive game. Tomorrow, the granddaddy of them all. Not quite as big as the Pop-Tart Bowl, but it still is a big deal.
Okay. All right.
So we have a bunch of things to get to going around the horn. But Jake, just kind of off rip here in relation to the Cavs. At this point, like, are you convinced? Because I do think people have taken kind of like this wait and see approach with the Cavs. And I know we're going to talk more about like the playoffs and is everything they're doing like transferable, I guess, in that way. But is there any reason at this point to feel like this, to believe this is still like fool's gold? Because to me, it's like, okay, it's one thing if it's like 15-0 and then you lose like a stretch of games and you're like, you know, 15-7 or something like that. But like they've now had this going for the better part of 2 months, going on to 3 months. Like the calendar's turning to January tomorrow, and they're still playing at this unbelievable pace. So like, to me, if you are worried that this isn't like this is some fluke thing and it's not going to hold up, I think you're just living in your fears because like I think they've proven at this point that this is legit. Like this is who they are as a team.
Yeah, I had this debate with JP not too long ago. I think on Christmas Eve, he told me that they weren't championship contenders. I was like, in what world? In what world are you not calling the Cavs championship contenders at 28-4 as the top team in the East where you're 1-1 against the Boston Celtics? I don't know what more you need to see. If you don't believe in this Cavs team, I got nothing. Like, I have absolutely nothing for you. Nothing will convince you other than the fact that they make the NBA Finals. That's the only thing that could turn you into, oh, this team's actually for real. Like, you're just... I can't buy into the wait and see until the playoffs thing for you to believe in the Cavs, because then, okay, you just ditch the NBA regular season. You have to learn something from it. You learn something about the team from it. If not, you'd be thinking that this team was... the lights were too bright if they went up against the New York Knicks. I don't think that's even close to the case.
Jared Allen. No, I listen, here's the thing. Like, I understand the concept behind, you know, prove it in the playoffs. Nothing matters to the playoffs. And I do think the NBA has this problem where they don't treat the regular season with, like, the TLC that they probably should when you got guys just like, I mean, you got Joel Embiid who's like, I'm not playing like any back-to-backs and I'm just going to kind of pick when I'm playing. And, you know, same thing with like somebody like Jimmy Butler in Miami, and like the load management thing becomes a problem. And so if you don't care about the regular season, the fans aren't going to care about the regular season. I think this isn't like a Cavs problem. This is more like an NBA at large problem. So I do think they have like that sort of narrative to buck on their own. And that's probably part of the reason why everyone keeps talking about it. Ratings are down this year, and people just don't seem to be like as in tune as they usually are. Granted, that always kind of happens at the early portion of the season anyway. But I get it. Like, I get why we subscribe to this, you got to show me in the playoffs. And I get why we do that, especially with this Cavs team, because we've seen the Cavs have good, fun off seasons, buy into the idea that they're going to do something special in the playoffs, and then get gentlemen swept by the New York Knicks. We've also bought into them like last year taking that next step, and they did, but then they still got waxed by the Boston Celtics in the end, and it was like, okay, you know, you're still not on quite on that level. So I get why people want to use that stage as like the barometer for like how good this team really is and what they're going to be able to accomplish. I totally understand that. But at the same time, like, if we're not enjoying the ride while we get there, like, what's the point? And the difference for me, Jake, this isn't just like, you know, we're winning some games, we're losing some games. Like, the last couple years, there was always this, like, fun thing on social media. It was like, oh, this Cavs team, man, they're so fun. I don't know that we're treating them like... That's almost like when they're like the new kids on the block and they're like up and coming, they're like an upstart team. You feel like it's just fun to watch them be competitive. This year, I think we've set the standard higher. And they, like, at this point, you're 28-4. Like, you've delivered on it in every facet in terms of, like, any bars that you would set for the regular season. They are jumping over every single one of them, like, leaps and bounds over them. So it's like, how can I not sit there and enjoy this and feel like it's not about them just being, like, this upstart fun team anymore? No. But it still is an enjoyable thing because now we have expectations and they're, like, exceeding those expectations. Nobody expected them to be this good in the regular season, no matter how you feel about what they should do in the playoffs.
Yeah, one, the NBA's problem of players and load management and everything, you mentioned, not a Cavs problem at all.
No, they don't do that. Yeah.
They're a team that takes the regular season very seriously.
For sure.
And they don't run any of their guys into the ground. They manage minutes very well. Yeah. Kenny Atkinson does.
We had Spencer Davies on yesterday. I was talking to Spence after the show, and I sorry to cut you off. But we talked about how like the regular season can be used to establish habits. And if you remember like the LeBron era teams, the one thing we only could say like definitively about them in terms of habits was they were like that flip the switch team. Like this time of year, there was always that a story written about like, are they going to flip the switch come, you know, March and April and into the playoffs and blah, blah, blah. That's not like this Cavs team. They don't do the flip the switch thing. They're like, we're going to use the regular season to get ourselves into a place where like, this is how we play. And again, we're going to talk later about like how transferable this style of play is and what they're doing to the postseason. Like then they're hoping that because they've done it so much, that it's going to be like a flawless transition into the postseason, which is probably the way you should handle it. But a lot of teams do the flip the switch thing because they do the low management thing.
Yeah, but that's not your Cavs team. And, and they're walking in, they're 28-4 again. 32 games, they flashed the graphic last night. It's like one of the hottest, I think, 20 starts in NBA history, being 28-4. I think there's 16 total teams and then four or five above that. Yeah. And a 31-game span because it was 27-4
And this
last
is their
night,
best start in 32 games I saw in the history of the organization.
Right, like, this team just comes in and night out and shows you time and time again, facing good teams, facing bad teams, they take care of business. They go in, they take care of business, and they find a way every single time, and it's not the same way. They're just finding ways to win. Like, if Donovan's off a night, somebody else steps up.
Yeah.
I just... this team has been built in a way that I was questioning it going into the offseason before you hired Kenny Atkinson, right? I thought Kobe Altman put you in a bad spot with the roster you had because they're, I mean, we talked about it all year, last year. You had 2 6-foot guards who felt like they couldn't play together. You had 2 basically 7-foot bigs who felt like they clogged the lane for each other. And that's all gone away. Now everything is flowing perfectly,
yeah.
And we're talking about the postseason. You have to see it there. Just don't enjoy NBA basketball. That's the bottom line. If you don't think the Cavs can do anything, don't enjoy NBA basketball.
I was going to say, if you're at a point where you're like, well, they got to prove it to me in the playoffs, I think you're just a hater at this point. Like you're there's no reason not to just accept and be happy with like what they're doing and realize like this is for real when they've been doing it this long to start the season.
Just a hater, right? Like, that's a team I look at who played, like, 500 the rest of the year after their big, like, 22-game stretch. Not a hate. That's
which smack guess, the Guardians. Which I guess could happen to the Cavs, because we're not even, like, at the halfway point of the season. But I just I don't think it's going to – that's true. But
you're 10 games short.
I don't think that's going to happen. But I'm just, like, I guess technically it could happen, but I don't think it's going to. So, yeah, I just think you're being a hater. I think you're just being a hater and you're mad because they didn't do what you wanted the last couple years. And so you're like, oh, they got to prove it to me. And, yeah, I get it. Like, when they get to the playoffs, they can prove it to you. But during the regular season – they're proving it to you.
Now, the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima give their thoughts on what you might have missed about last night.
Well, I can tell you the Cavaliers didn't rehire J.B. Bickerstaff last night. He was on that intro there, which was funny.
That's for the better. Keep him on the intro. Keep him out of the
No matter how you feel about the Cavs and whether or not they're going to be in the what they're going to do in the playoffs, I can guarantee you feel better that they don't have that they have Kenny Atkinson over J.B. Bickerstaff. So that's good news. Speaking of Kenny Atkinson, we talked about it already a little bit, but Cavaliers 113-95, they take down the Warriors last night. Another win for the Wine and Gold, 28-4 on the season. It's unbelievable stuff. They're firing away from the 3-point line, and Kenny Atkinson talked about the latest Cavaliers win and if they're peaking too early with the calendar set to flip to 2025.
I'm not worried about slowing down. Like I said, I think we play a lot of guys, right? So I think we keep the roster fresh. We keep our rotations fresh. And I think that helps with the highs and lows or the dips. So we'd be very similar to Steve. I like to play a lot of guys. I think that helps with the spirit of the group. And, yeah, this West Coast trip, it's a big test for us, you know, and I wanted to see how we react. I give us an A, right? Denver going to Denver, beat Denver, come in and beat the four-time champion, you know, really good start to the trip.
Yeah, you can hear the confidence there from Atkinson. You heard the clips earlier from the game, all that obviously courtesy of the FanDuel Sports Network. Kenny's got them rolling on all cylinders. And I got to say, like, specific to last night, doesn't it feel good to watch a Cavaliers team, like, dismantle the Warriors the same way that they used to dismantle us at times? Like, isn't that kind of like the nice bonus to them not being as dominant as they are and the Cavaliers doing what they're doing right now?
Yeah, honestly, I caught myself smiling. There was a miscommunication play. I think it was the start of the fourth quarter, maybe late in the third, where Steph just ended up wide open. And I was like, oh, this is bottoms. And it rimmed out. And I was like, man, that feels good. Gosh, I love to see it. It's just nice to see... as many times as I've seen Steph wide open or the hand in his face, just drain one, and it be like the soul crusher for me in the Cavs season and it coming down to the NBA Finals. It was nice just to see one rim out as the Cavs just extend their lead further and further and further, and I can just watch and be like, ah, this seems just better. That's all it is. They're just better.
You're right, though. Like, the number of times that we saw Steph just drain that shot, and it just, like, your heart just sunk into your stomach because you were like, well... Before it even found the nylon, it was like, oh, well, that one's in, and you just knew. And to see him missing those, and on the flip side, the Cavaliers are just, like, blowing teams out the same way that the Warriors did in 2016. It's like, ah, what a feeling. What a feeling. Like, it's a little role reversal, and I get it. It's not the same Warriors team. Klay Thompson's not there anymore. These guys are largely not in their primes anymore. I think Steph's still playing at a very high level, obviously, but Draymond's not necessarily the same player. But it just feels good. It just feels good to give them a little taste of their own medicine. Like, yeah, remember when you used to just, like, run this league and, you know, you steamrolled everybody? Well, that's us now. Now it's the Cavaliers' time to do that to people.
What a weird night, too. So many, like, bunnies that the Warriors missed. Just inside, pretty much open. Like, they got good looks, and they just were not falling. It was like they had the cover on the basket. What was happening? The Cavs were putting
plastic wrap on the basket?
Yeah, it's what it felt like. Everything that should have dropped just wasn't dropping. Like, you brought up Draymond. It reminded me of him just... going up wide open, nobody near him, and he sold it. They absolutely sold it, and it happened time after time, and it just felt like the Warriors were beating themselves last night in addition to the Cavs. I mean,
yeah,
going on a tear in the third quarter.
I didn't hear Draymond's comments after the game, but I know the last time they played, like earlier this season, he was like very complimentary of the Cavs and how well they play. I'd be curious to go back and hear what he has to say, because as much as like I hate Draymond for his antics and stuff, he does know ball, and he does show respect to teams that like he thinks are doing good things, and I think he's noted that about this Cavs team before. So, yeah, really exciting stuff, and the Cavaliers win again. Their amazing season continues. We'll come back to this a little bit later. Also happening or going on last night, and it had very important implications for my fantasy football team, which we'll get into. I will give you an update on the controversial fantasy football team here coming up. But Monday Night Football, the Lions stave off the 49ers. And what's interesting about this game, Jake, the Lions really didn't have to like really take this game all that seriously. It meant nothing in the grand scheme of things, because we know that the game next week is to decide the number one overall seed and who wins the NFC North. And they still went in, took it seriously. They were still going for it on every fourth down. And they hang 40 points in the 49ers in a game that they clearly were trying to win. And they come away with the victory. Here was Dan Campbell after the game.
I just don't believe it's fair to put in a guy who's not prepared to play, especially a young player. You can only sit six guys. So who are those six? Well, we can just, all right, who are the six? And then the other guys that don't, was it fair to them that we're not using everything we've got? We prepared this way. We came out to win. And that's ultimately what it came to. And, yeah, you do. You cross your fingers. Nobody gets hurt. I mean, it's tough. And we were fortunate. You know, we got out. And now it's on to the next one.
That's such a classic Dan Campbell answer. Why would I sit guys? I don't do that around here. Come on. We go out. We play. That's the same thing Mike Tomlin's going to do with the Steelers this weekend. He's not going to sit anybody.
I mean, is it bad that I kind of like the blue-collar approach of, like, these guys don't need that much of a break? Like, when a guy gets injured, it feels like it blows up in your face.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing at all. But, yeah, like, if you had lost, like, Jared Goff last night or something, people would have been like, why? Why would you do this? Like, well, come on. But at the same time, like, when it doesn't happen and you win, everyone's going to eat it up and be like, oh, Dan Campbell and the blue-collar Detroit Lions. How about that? Like, people in Cleveland would love that.
Like, do you not get scared that a team, maybe more of like a fringe team, like I don't know that you get scared with the Chiefs when it comes to this, or one of the top teams in the AFC or even the NFC, but a team that's sort of fringe, if they know they're in and they sit their starters, that you're not coming in like a little rusty, a little bit of a break, you have a 1 week off, or is you just treat it like a bye week and you expect teams to come out on fire?
Yeah, I mean, that's the hard thing too, is like this is a weird situation where if you sap people, you're giving them like an extra bye week off before they play like an actual meaningful game, before the playoffs actually start. Like, it's not the situation where it's like, well, this game means absolutely, like this weekend you're going to get a bunch of this. The Bills can't move up. The Chiefs obviously are locked in. Like, they're going to probably rest a lot of their starters because they're like, well, there's nothing that can change here. This game means absolutely nothing except for like a blemish on our record. So yeah, let's try not to like get anybody hurt. But in this instance, it was like you had a game that didn't really matter before a game that actually means like everything to this Detroit team. So, yeah, like, I don't like the idea of that either, where it's like, you have so much momentum, these guys are, like, week to week, where they get in their rhythm, they do their thing. It makes sense why I played them. I have no problem with it, obviously, and it worked out. And the game was fun. Like, I also enjoyed the fact that the 49ers, like, given how the season's gone, like, they're still playing hard. I mean, Brock Purdy was, like, slinging it in the first half. I was getting annoyed because I had Juwan Jennings in fantasy, and he wouldn't throw the ball to Juwan Jennings. He threw the ball to everybody else. They put up, like, 28 points the first half. I was like, what are we doing? 21 points the first half, but yeah.
Yeah, the thought process here, too, is like, if you win next week and you're the Lions, you get a bye. There's your break.
Yeah.
Like, you play now, you stay in your rhythm, you get the win next week over Minnesota, then you've earned your rest. You've earned your rest for a first-round bye. Congratulations. If you don't do that, then what's the point? Then you're going on the road, and you should have been tuned up anyway.
And finally, I have bantied about it multiple times on this radio station. I tweeted about it last night when I was going to bed, that in 6 hours from 12:20, I would be talking about this very thing in about last night. The controversial fantasy football team that I assembled this year with help from a friend who was drafting for me, because I was at my brother-in-law's wedding and my so-called friends couldn't give me the courtesy of accepting the I guess circumstances and the temporary solution we found to sort of figure that out. And then they tried to pull the carpet out from underneath me at the last second. I can tell you, Jake, I wake up this morning and host this show with you. That's the real reason why I overslept. I was up popping champagne last night. I am officially a fantasy football champion. Courtesy, thank you, Jahmyr Gibbs. 18 carries, 117 yards, and a touchdown. Juwan Jennings added 10 points as well. You know, it was funny. I was talking to you about this during the break. It was like a slow burn. They were like, the fantasy gods were out here like really milking this thing. And I got to like 7-8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and I was still down like 0.24 points or something like that. And I was like, really? Really? Like, you can't just help me win this. And then like Jahmyr Gibbs broke up like an 11-yard run. I got to like 111 to 110, and I was finally winning. And then like after I finally got there, they took the entire game to get me just 1 point past. And then I won by 16 points because he scored a touchdown after that too. So I just got to be honest, man. It feels pretty damn good to have feel vindicated for the way that I was treated, the mistreatment from this fantasy league, and to come out on top, and to come out on top against the commissioner who tried to screw me over in the first place. And Jake, I didn't only beat him in the regular season to get to the playoffs. I think I told you about this. I was down 40 points. 39 points the last week of the regular season, needed to win to get in the playoffs, pulled off a 40-point comeback to get in, and then I was down 20 points last night to win the championship against him. So take that. I rallied against the system, and I am now the fantasy football champion, and I expect my Venmo to receive a substantial payday at some point in the near future.
So that was the big question. We have not been paid yet.
That was the big question yesterday. I have not been paid yet. There is a group chat that I am in, and everyone seems to be kumbaya. The guy who controls the money threw in a hashtag, not my champ, but he did say that the money will be sent at some point. So I think we're in the clear on this. I was hoping that that would be the case, and it was all just kind of like league fodder, which we like to have fun with that. So I kind of figured that's what it was. We were all just in the name of having some trash talk going into the final week of the season. I'm fine, whatever. But yes, I expect the payday to hit my Venmo at some point. Yes.
So what do we do with the? Is it a nice dinner for yourself? Do we treat yourself to a nice dinner and then pocket the leftover money?
This money is 100% going to whatever my car payment is going to be in the near future, because I am going to be getting a new car in the very, very near future, and so that's why that's another reason why this matters to me so much, because if they're gonna not give me this money. Like, no, I won, and this money is going towards something very important. I need to get a new car. And this the payday I get from this is probably going to cover like two car payments all on its own. So, yeah, I want my money.
Is your wife a supporter of fantasy football, or do you usually get the donation the donation comment when you lose?
No, she doesn't really care about it, but she'll ask how I'm doing in my leagues and all that. She knew how she was as mad as I was about this league, because it was her brother's wedding that we were at when the whole thing went down. So she was as mad as I was about the way that it was handled. And so she definitely wanted me to win, like, as a spiteful thing too. And so I did, and we were texting about it last night a little bit, because she was upstairs and I was finishing watching the game downstairs while I was getting ready to record this podcast. And yeah, we now know, like, and it's funny, like, over the years, like, I've used the money I've won in leagues for different things. The first year we were married, I used it on, we just got married that year. I won the championship in a different league, and I used my winnings to pay for, like, a dinner on the beach on our honeymoon. So the money actually went to something like we both got to, I guess, you know, enjoy in that way, which this kind of does too, because we both get to enjoy this car that I'm going to buy at some point, but yeah.
I was gonna say with this support, she should get a nice dinner, but that already happened.
Well, okay, I'll trim an extra.
Romanticism is dead, right?
I'll trim an
Why
extra
do it now.
Okay, I'll trim $100 off the top that we can use on dinner, and the other whatever, I forget what the exact number is, will just go towards this car payment. Fine. All right, Jake. Sorry. Chivalry is not dead.
Your wife can thank me later for the dinner.
I was so focused on the car payment thing. Okay.
Trying to be a responsible adult.
yes, but it feels good. Feels good. I got my revenge. I'm vindicated. What a night. If you're bringing everybody back and there's already questions about, I guess, both Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you actually trust Kevin Stefanski to be the guy making these picks?
Andrew Berry.
In the draft, or what did I say?
Kevin Stefanski, yeah.
Do you trust Andrew Berry to be the guy making the picks for this team, whether it's the third overall pick, the first overall pick, or otherwise? And I do think it's a valid question, because like this is the thing that I kept going back to, too. As I thought about, like, okay, I understand why they're trying to bring it back and keep continuity, because a lot of times, like, they try to build these front offices where they're aligned. They have two people who are like-minded, thinking on the same page. They know what the goals are. They're kind of moving in the same direction. So I can understand why you're bringing everybody back. But the thing I kept going back to was this exact question. Do I actually trust Andrew Berry to make the picks, though? And that's probably the most concerning thing for me is I don't think I do. Like, I don't know that any of us feel like overly confident in his ability to identify and draft talent for this team, because he hasn't hit on a number of picks over the last 5 years, including first rounders that he has had. So I ask you, Jake, like, how much does it worry you that, yes, the Browns have a top three pick right now, and that likely is going to be the case after next week as well, but it's Andrew Berry who is the guy pulling the trigger on whatever decision, pick, player they're going to use it for?
Yeah, I mean, I don't love it. I'll be honest. Like, I don't have a lot of faith for Berry, but I do. So I sit there and think about this, and while he's made, what, 30? I think we're up to 34 draft picks that he's made in total.
I think you're right about that, yes.
Not a ton of them that have panned out. Not ones that you feel too great about. I also wonder if you sit there and you've had two first-rounders that he's made at picks 10 and 26, and if we almost overblow the entire situation of, like, how many chances has he really had?
So we've got an Andrew Berry defense.
No, I want to make it very clear. It's not an Andrew Berry defense. Like, it is a genuine question of, are you too quick to the gun on Andrew Berry with the lack of first-round talent? Because, by the way, I don't think anybody when Greg Newsom was drafted was upset thinking that's a terrible pick. And then he goes and gets JOK in the second round, who I actually thought I was clamoring for the Browns to take in the first round because I liked him a lot. Like,
well, that's maybe his best pick. Is there somebody better than JOK that he's made?
Not even close.
JOK, I mean, Cedric Tillman's maybe becoming a player. I mean, that probably is it. But the thing with JOK now is, like, we don't even know what his future holds. I want to be clear. Like, that doesn't eliminate the pick. Like, it was clearly a good pick, the right pick. He made a good call on that one, and it was, you know, it was easy at that point. He had fallen so far, it was like, you got to take JOK. He was a first-round graded player that was in the second round. It just stinks that we are sort of we have this ominous perspective on what his career is even going to look like from here because, well, we don't really know when he's even going to be back in the building, and nobody can tell us anything. So, on the surface, you're right in that maybe he hasn't been given enough time, but it's not like John Dorsey was here all that long either, right?
No.
And John Dorsey nailed, like, the majority of his, maybe not even the majority, because I think he had, like, one really good draft, and then his second draft was, like, okay. There's actually a couple players from his second draft that have turned out to be pretty good players elsewhere, like Austin Corbett, for example. He's still a starting lineman in this league, but he didn't make it as a starting lineman on the Browns. So, like, there was still but you can still see, like, the talent acquisition, the talent evaluation there, where John Dorsey nailed on a number of players that are either core guys still on this Browns team or playing somewhere else and still competitive and good football players. I get what you're saying. I also just think, like, 5 years in, if we're still asking ourselves questions about, like, their ability to identify these players and they only have so many guys they've hit on, I think that's the biggest concern. And that is understanding that he went 3 years without a first-round pick, but that's also a situation that you put yourself in.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you wanted to get Deshaun Watson. I know they say it was a group effort, everybody had a say in it, but you're the GM that falls on. It's on your lap at the end of the day. Like, that is your decision at the end of the day. So I have a hard time just, like, consensusly sitting there and being like, oh, yeah, like, you get a pass because you didn't have first-round picks. No, like, you made the decision to trade those first rounders. And when you make that decision, you are banking on, yes, we trust our, you know, talent evaluators and our scouts to identify players in on day two, on day three, that can still be pieces for us moving forward.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, if we go through this draft and it's likely going to be Andrew Berry making the picks, right? I think
what would have to change between now and Sunday, or I guess Saturday, for them to actually fire Andrew Berry?
I think it would be more Jimmy Haslam's mind's already made up that he's not going to be here, and he's been
But he's been telling everybody that he's not doing I think the number of times, like if he says that one time in like October, maybe, but he said it as recently as like last week. Like Diana Rossini was like reporting it like last week. So it's like at this point, And like Ian Rappaport's had columns about like, you know, what coaches are going to be looking for jobs and or what teams are going to be looking for coaches. And the Browns continue to just be like, nope, status quo, nothing's changing. So I don't believe anything's going to change. But yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's two things that go into it. One, you compare him to Dorsey, who's probably one of the best like drafters of, I don't know, the last couple of decades. Like he nails a lot of his picks, whether that was with Kansas City, whether that's with Cleveland, how much impact he has in Detroit, who knows? I'm sure he has a pretty good say in that as well. Like, he nails just about everything. Andrew's been the opposite, but like if he goes through this draft and hits on like 6 of the 9 picks, what are you going to say? Like, okay, he's been really bad the first few years. Are you ditching him after that, after he hits not 6 picks? Like, I don't have a lot of trust in him. Again, it's not a defense of Andrew Berry.
You can hit on 6 of 9 picks, and the team could still be 3 and whatever next year, and you could still fire everybody. I mean, that happens all the time in the NFL. But, no, I mean, from like a trust level standpoint, I guess if he hits on 6 of 9 picks,
you'd feel a lot better.
Assuming they make all 9 picks, or if they like trade out of 3 and get multiple firsts or something, and they nail those 2 picks. Yeah, like, I think at that point, you start to trust Andrew Berry more, and you're like, okay, so this guy can evaluate talent, and he just maybe didn't have the first-round picks to sort of prove that the last couple years.
Yeah, like, I don't think when you draft Jed Wills at 10, like, I like Tristan Wirfs. It felt obvious to me that Wirfs was a good pick, but I also think consensusly, nobody was there where it was, oh, like, that was a surprising pick. It was sort of, you had the 3 tackles at the top of the draft, whoever you end up picking was kind of dealer's choice. Nobody had like it's clearly going to be Wirfs, then it's going to be Wills, and then it'll be Andrew Thomas was at the other tackle in that pick, like around that area. I don't think that was like a given. You just missed on Wills, which, again, it's his job. I'm not trying to give him a pass. I don't have a lot of trust in him. I'm just wondering if it's, are you too quick to the gun? It's been 5 years, but you also haven't handed him a ton of like quality draft capital to work with either. He's had 2nd and 3rd round picks. Again, it's not me saying I trust him. It's not me saying give him another chance. It's just running through my head of, okay, if he goes in the 1st round, you give him the 3rd pick, and he absolutely nails it, and you have a stud, and then the 2nd round, he nails it again.
I just think 5 years in, we have a pretty good indication of like what he's done with his drafts, whether he's had 1st round picks or not. And it's not just about the picks either. Like, there's other players that he signed that he's missed on. And at this point, the only thing you can tell me he does consistently well is nails trades for wide receivers and is really good at balancing the books and moving money around. Those are the 2 things I can say he does well. Now, I will give an argument for why, if you don't trust Andrew Berry to make any sort of pick, why it's actually important that the Browns have the highest pick possible. I'll give you that when we get back as well.